So our second speaker is Brielle Bodin-Reimer. Brielle Bodin-Reimer is a Michif woman born and raised in St. Eustache, Manitoba, and a citizen of the Manitoba Métis Federation. She is currently living and raising her own family in Winnipeg. Brielle earned a BA in History and French and an MA in Indigenous Governance, all at the University of Winnipeg, and is currently completing her PhD in Indigenous Studies at the University of Manitoba. She is also the founder of Sage Research and Consulting Incorporated, a Red River Métis-owned and led research and consulting firm that supports community-led research agendas and strategic program development. Brielle's presentation is titled Reflections on Using Oral History, an Approach that Values Red River Métis Lived Experiences in the 20th Century. Brielle.
My name is Brielle Bodin-Reimer, and I am thrilled to be here today to partake in the Oral History Center's 10th year celebration on this panel. Also, when I was doing the math, I was like, because I was one of the first projects that went through the Oral History Center, I was like, this isn't quite 10 years, this is a bit over. So I'm glad you corrected that from the outset. So my presentation entitled Reflections on Using Oral History, an Approach that Values Red River Métis Lived Experiences in the 20th Century, is perhaps fittingly a reflection on 10 years of working with oral history as a method throughout my educational, professional, and personal life. So I will talk about the first oral history project that I did with the support of the Oral History Center 10 years ago, and the ways in which this project shaped my intellectual work around using oral history as a method and its ontological underpinnings and its value as a form of historical documentation for Red River Métis history. As Brett mentioned, I am a Michif woman, a Red River Métis citizen with the Manitoba Métis Federation, and although I have lived here, it's crazy to say, for almost two decades in Winnipeg, St. Eustache is still the place I call home and is still the community that I am a part of. I did attend the University of Winnipeg, earning a four-year BA in history and a master's in Indigenous Governance, and as Brett mentioned, I'm now a PhD candidate in the University of Manitoba in the Department of Indigenous Studies, where I am currently in the process of writing my dissertation, which examines research ethics and its engagement with research involving Red River Métis citizens. Oral history is the thread that has woven and shaped my academic and professional experiences. And 10 years ago, I was introduced to the center by Dr. Alexander Freund in the last year of my undergraduate degree. He had encouraged me to pursue a passion research project in response to my experience in pursuing history as an undergraduate student. I had explained to him with a lot less clarity than I'm able to express to you today. Keep in mind, I was an undergraduate student, and I had explained to him that the Métis history that I was encountering in the classroom, in my coursework and scholarship, did not seem to reflect the contemporary Métis lived experiences or the recounting of histories of generations before mine, but rather the history was largely driven by a narrative history through the lens of the fur trade and muddled ethno-historical work, which loosely traced Métis identities and histories through archival records. What I have come to realize that I was noticing then as a student was the gap that exists in Métis historiography, which Michelle Hoag has discussed in his 2019 article, that leaves 19th century histories disjointed from 20th century histories and 21st century lived experiences. In an aim to explore this, detached from contemporary connection and remembrances of Métis lived experiences across generations, Dr. Freund encouraged me to consider using oral history and supported me with putting together a very humble research proposal to explore generational Métis identity across three generations of one family using semi-structured, in-depth life history interviews. He encouraged me to find funding to carry out the project, and I was able to secure enough funds through the UWSA Travel Grant, the Arnold Fund Grant, the Oral History Center Grant, and through the Louis Riel Institute with the Manitoba Métis Federation, which actually allowed me to spend an entire summer working solely on this project, where I prepared for the research, recruited three individuals of one family, conducted the interviews, transcribed the recordings, validated the transcripts, and then gave the files back to the individuals, as well as the Louis Riel Institute for archiving. I also have to give a shout out to Kent Davies, who helped me numerous times with many different things along in that year, but also in the 10 years that have just passed, always being super helpful. The names of the interviewees that I worked with on the project were Melissa Ross, who was the first generation, Clarence Ross, who was her father, who was the second generation, and Rose Ross, who was Clarence Ross's mother and Melissa's paternal grandmother, who was the third generation. The Rosses are part of the Ross family clan in St. Eustache, which is one of the largest family clans, along with the Bowden clans, that currently reside in the community. Surprisingly, for a community like St. Eustache, we were only distantly related. With that said, though, this is a family that I knew well. In fact, they were like a second family to me growing up. Using oral history, the purpose of the project was to explore different experiences and facets of identity throughout the three generations who had stayed in place. The research was entitled Exploring Generational Métis Identity Across Three Generations of One Family in St. Eustache, Manitoba. The central objectives were to document an important people in Manitoban and Canadian history, to highlight the intrinsic perspectives and lived experiences of three generations in one family, and lastly, to shed light on the perceptions of identity in relation to their environment. We did numerous sessions for each of the interviewees so that we could cover as much of their life that they wanted to, and questions were kept quite short and open-ended to encourage conversation and remembering at their pace to support them in how they wanted to share. After it was all done, there was one conversation that I had with Professor Freund that has stayed with me and that I've thought about quite a bit. I'm not sure if he remembers, and I'm sorry to hear that he's not here today to ask him, but he had asked me, so what did they say about their Métis identity? And I said, I didn't know. And he said, why not? And I said, because I didn't specifically ask. And given the topic was on Métis identity, naturally he asked me why I didn't ask, and I said I didn't know. The reality was I couldn't put into words why I felt that I couldn't specifically ask about this. All I knew was that it felt like something that was inappropriate to do. I've thought a lot about this over the past 10 years. Did I make the right choice? My curiosity about why I couldn't ask has prompted much of my exploration of larger epistemological and ontological questions of how these questions shape oral history in theory and practice. I have concluded that not asking about how they perceived their identity was the right thing for me to do. And I'm not saying that this would have been right for everyone, because all research and researchers are differently positioned, but it was for me. The two reasons that I came to this conclusion are because asking the question would have positioned me as someone that was othering them. It would have been outside of our relationship for me to do so. To the first point, it felt uncomfortable to sit and ask about Métis identity to those I had grown up with, to which those were not the conversations that we regularly had. We just lived. It's akin to speaking a language to somebody your whole life and then having to communicate with them in another language. It just feels weird and outside of the relationship. As someone who had left home to pursue post-secondary education, I was already coming into my relationship by adding an outside layer, by virtue of entering these conversations as a researcher. Bringing up that specific question just felt like I would be bringing someone else into the researcher's role. The second reason why I feel confident about my decision in hindsight is because the reality is that in-depth life histories reveal so much about one's identity, how one feels about their lived experiences, how they feel in relation to others. All of these are reflections of their identity in their own words as they see it. In reflection of the purpose of asking specific questions regarding identity, I remain curious. Would a specific question regarding their identity influence interviewees to reduce the fullness and complexity of the narratives that they so carefully and intentionally shared throughout their in-depth life histories into a fragment for it to be quantifiable and consumptive? And if so, where does the demand for such a quantifiable reduction come from, and to whom does it benefit? Coming back to Michelle Hoag's argument regarding the gap that exists between 19th and 20th century Métis historiography, and I should point out here that most of these histories are not written by Métis folks. For anyone that has done archival research related to the Red River Métis, you know that our presence in archival records is inconsistent, scattered, and grossly misrepresented, an issue that is largely due to our misrecognition, misidentification in the record-keeping process. As a result, the race to define and describe Métis identity has been largely driven by outsiders, non-Métis folks, trying to understand Métis individuals, families, and communities. One of my remaining curiosities that I carry with me from this project is related to how the ontological underpinnings shape our use of oral history as a method. Specifically, how does this inform how we shape interview questions? And how does it align or misalign, or how does the alignment, and misalignment affect the interview questions in our practice and those that we do our research with? For me personally, coming out of this experience, I have been shaped by this central question: for whom do we ask questions for? I have taken the lasting curiosities and lessons from this project, and there are many more, into my master's research, where I interviewed Métis harvesters on their perspectives related to harvesting practices and their right to harvest. My use of oral history has also allowed me to theorize larger questions related to research ethics and ontological misalignment, all of which have helped immensely with my doctoral research. And professionally, in our work with Sage Research and Consulting, we use oral history and advocate for its use as an important method for data collection, and one that can support research questions outside of immediate research needs, while also being a valuable form of historical documentation that captures Red River Métis 20th century and 21st century histories from their own lived experiences and perspectives. In an aim to support data sovereignty, we always give back the data to those we conduct interviews with, and also offer individuals the opportunity to have their materials deposited to the Louis Riel Institute archive as a way to support future research use, intergenerational access to family histories, and support local self-governing capacities in data sovereignty. I have yet to meet anyone who has declined this offering. Most people are thrilled at the opportunity to have their materials deposited into the archives for future generations to access. Many people that I have worked with are excited at this offering and have identified that they wish that their ancestors had been able to leave that type of historical record for them to look at. My intention of sharing this with you today was to give you a glimpse into my work and how I have used oral history. But more importantly, I hope to create an open and honest space to share my reflections and experiences with you in a way that invites you to engage with me and others in the room for the rest of the afternoon, not as experts, but as people that are humbly navigating the academy to engage in meaningful work in our communities. I'm very grateful for the support that the oral history has given over the years, and I look forward to the next 10 years. Thank you very much.